Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, Jaguars Today, our first official order of business today. Happy birthday, Donna Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, finally, someone's birthday of someone I like on this program. A fine former producer, probably the best producer I've ever worked with. Present company excluded.
I'd agree with you.
Keep the show on the rails today. How was your birthday yesterday, Tyler Devin?
It was good. It involved a few beers, some Cubs baseball, and it doesn't get better than that.
Oh, okay. Did they win or lose?
They won last night. It was Jake Arrieta Day.
You didn't know what to do with yourself then.
I don't know what to do. It doesn't happen very often.
How many birthdays have the Cubs won for you?
Not very often, but we did reach number 80 last night, Mike. 80 wins, first team to 80.
Excellent, man. That's always been the goal. Win 80 games in the regular season, Tony.
Well, the Braves beat you to 80.
And you
but,
feel like...
it's in the loss column.
The other category.
They got their 80 in quick. Honestly, I've got no idea what the Yankees' record is right now. I know this. It's not qualifying for the postseason.
They're 3 or 4 games above 500.
Yeah, I know. They're kind of in that zone
they
where
beat the Mariners
they're
last
teasing
night.
Me enough to think they could actually sneak into one of those one-game wild card situations.
Right. I'm paying attention to Seattle because they were my surprise playoff team
this year.
So, and they're right on the edge in the American League, so I've been watching Seattle a little bit the last couple weeks.
All right, today is Wednesday. That means we're brought to you by Metro Rooter on Jaguars Today. Today is also the birthday of one Allen Robinson.
Yes,
how about
it
that?
Is.
23 years old, just like Donna Murphy is. And Allen Robinson, unlike Donna Murphy, has a Pro Bowl to his credit. She's covered many Super Bowls, though, so it kind of balances out. But A-Rob, spectacular last year with 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns on 80 catches. It was so nice and symmetrical and easy to figure out. And, you know, it is everything ending in nice round figures for Allen Robinson last year with the 80 catches for 1,400 yards. But, you know, I was reading Jaguars.com today. John Osier has an article about Allen Robinson, how close he is to being a truly elite player in the National Football League. Not just a good guy. A lot of guys make the Pro Bowl, Tony, right? You know, 50-some-odd in each conference. So not all those players are the super elite that we think about. Remember, I brought up the other day, ESPN is doing their own ranking of the top 100 players in the National Football League. NFL.com did. The Jags ended up with 5 players. This is as voted on by the players. They use a different methodology where the players list the top 20 guys that they can think of in the National Football League. And ESPN only had one Jag in the top 100. That was Allen Robinson. He came in at number 74.
As well as Sports Illustrated, they had a top 100 and only one Jaguar there.
Is that right? When did they do theirs?
That was recent as well. I think the last week or two they started unveiling them.
And theirs is complete all the way through number one.
Yeah, they said they listed a certain group of teams that only had one player selected, and the Jaguars were in that group.
ESPN did 51 through 100 on Monday. They did the next 25 yesterday, and they released the top 25 today. Surprise, surprise. J.J. Watt came in at number one. I know that's terrible because he's not a very good player and he's completely overrated. So saith the listening audience.
He's solid.
Or at least some of those on social media who are a little bit more active in that regard. But Allen Robinson, I think, easy to see league-wide if you're going to say who's the best player right now on the Jags. He's the only Pro Bowler they had. He's an ascending player. He's only 23 years old.
Right.
My goodness, today. Happy 23rd birthday. And, you know, look, Jimmy Smith set a pretty high bar. That's why on December 11th, he's going to get inducted into the Pride of the Jaguars. Well-deserved as the best. What, 5 Pro Bowls for Jimmy, I think it was in his time, Tony?
And I think so, yeah.
And had he been able to stay away, you know, from the drugs, let's be honest, he probably could have extended his career for a few more years and maybe put some of his milestone numbers out of reach, at least reasonable reach, of anybody coming up. But I think Allen Robinson, look, at his age, guy could keep going for another dozen years. Easy, right? Receivers play into their mid to late 30s very effectively these days. If he can avoid the injury bug, one day, not now, but one day, Allen Robinson may go down as the best wide receiver in team history. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say that. He's not there yet. No one's saying that. No one's saying he's number two. But statistically, he's climbing the charts already. Well, you looked up, what, a 1,000-yard season puts him fourth on the all-time receiving list for the Jags?
1,000 yards this year would put him just ahead of Maurice Jones-Drew. The only three guys that would be ahead of him would be Mercedes Lewis, Keenan McCardell, and Jimmy Smith.
And Jimmy Smith, okay. And, you know, Mercedes still, we're talking about total yardage, right?
Yes.
And Allen Hurns could break into the top 7 by the way, which goes to show you
yeah.
that outside of those, that original pair of outstanding receivers the Jaguars had in the late 90s, early 2000s, that they haven't had much at that position.
Well, they've had 11 receivers in franchise history to this point that have 2,000 yards in their career.
And is that wide receivers? That's all pass catchers.
That's all pass catchers.
Right, and you
so
listen,
you got
Maurice
Pete
Jones-Drew,
Mitchell's in there.
Tight end.
Fred Taylor's in there.
Running back.
Kyle Brady.
Tight end.
Maurice Jones-Drew.
Running back.
And Mercedes Lewis.
Tight end.
And
that's...
three of those five names, or those names I just mentioned, are top five.
Right. So
Mercedes, Mocho, and Kyle Brady are top five.
So today, what we wanted to ask you, certainly I think Allen Robinson fits this bill. And we're not saying he's there yet or definitely will get there, but I think he has the potential. He's shown the potential and the desire and the drive, what kind of guy he is. You go read John's article. It's a very good one, as they typically are at Jaguars.com, about what motivates him. And he wants to go down as one day being worthy of being considered a Hall of Fame type player, right? I think Jimmy Smith is a Hall of Fame type player, whether he ever gets into the Hall of Fame or not. He played at that level that many years in a row, making Pro Bowls, doing those things. So today, our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you, out of all the current Jaguars, who can you envision maybe one day going down as the best at the position that's ever played for this franchise? Okay? You look at Malik Jackson, he's making $90 million. You're going to be better than Stroud and Henderson? That's a pretty tall order.
Sure.
Okay? I mean, maybe he will, maybe he won't, but that's a pretty tall order for Malik Jackson. So, who fits that category? Who do you think? Give us some feedback on that today on Twitter, on the Facebook page, on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, the Jaguars Today Facebook page, open for business, 641-1010, the phone number as always. Also, the text line driven by Duval Ford. You can get in a variety of ways today. We'll hear from Gus Bradley as the Jags tune up. They're kind of in regular season game mode with a Sunday game this week, trying to practice as they would throughout the course of the week and gearing up towards a Sunday game. We'll have the Sunday Night Football crew in here with the Cincinnati Bengals coming in. So let's talk Jag football and let's look to the future as well. Happy birthday, Allen Robinson. Happy birthday, Donna Murphy. And happy birthday plus one to Tyler Devitt, because I'm that nice, all right? Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, glad you're along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, as big as you can imagine. Metro Rooter can handle it with same-day service, weekends included. You've got an issue, they're going to come right out and help you solve that. The right people and the right equipment, that's a powerful combination. It's why Metro Rooter has been as successful as they've been since 1978, serving Jacksonville and beyond. Trust me, I live in the beyond down in St. Johns County, and they've helped me out. MetroRooter.com, 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Picking up a couple of things on Twitter right here. In regards to the Brian Stork story we're talking about, former Florida State center, had been a starter, started a lot of games over the last couple of years for the New England Patriots on their offensive line. And obviously he's a center, so he started on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. Christopher Price, who covers the team, I believe he's with WEEI for a while. I don't know if he still is, wrote on Twitter, he was occasionally ornery, with us. But if it's a serious medical issue, sincerely hope he gets treatment, help, assistance. And then someone replied to that. Occasionally, he was the worst guy I dealt with in 9+ years. That's the feeling, I think. You know, look, it seems to be very fashionable now to diagnose people's medical conditions without having actually had the credibility of examining them or being a medical doctor or any of those things. But he does seem like he has almost like a personality quirk. I don't want
to
say it's
yeah.
a disorder. I mean, he seems like a guy who just is a not happy with life kind of guy. At least that's the impression we got from dealing with Brian Stork. Wish him the best, you know, as a person. So what? You're, you know, rude to me in an interview. It doesn't mean I, want you to fall off the face of the earth or anything like that. But it's got to be a little bit disturbing now, as we talked about, for New England, Tony, to lose this many key players. At some point, you just can't make up for it. Now, that doesn't mean they've reached that point yet, but as you said, two-fifths of the starting offensive line, your quarterback for the first month, your dynamic breakout tailback from last season is out with a second surgery after he had the ACL repaired for the next 8 to 10 weeks. So we'll see if that all catches up with New England.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick, the coach, keeps bailing out Bill Belichick, the GM, in a lot of instances. And he's been doing it for over a decade now up there in New England, where there's times where the Patriots make moves where you're like, what? You're going to do what now? And whether it's Belichick's coaching ability or Tom Brady just being as great as he's been for the last decade and a half in the league, they've been able to overcome all those things. At some point, they're going to reach some hurdle that they can't jump over. It's going to happen at some point, and maybe that's 2016. We'll find out.
Maybe it is. Well, who knows? That hurdle will be called the Jacksonville Jaguars, as we all know. The Jags, by the way, really catching the eye, as I mentioned, of Peter King of Sports Illustrated. Now, to be fair,
some national love, all right.
They are getting some national love. Peter King, he pretty much goes around to over 20 training camps, I would say, every year, right? But something like, I don't think he hits every single one, but I think the people at the Monday Morning Quarterback Collective, like Robert Klemko and those other guys, all collectively will visit every training camp. But Peter King himself, I think typically somewhere in the 20 to 22 range. In a midweek edition of the Monday Morning Quarterback article, he said the team that impressed him the most was the Jaguars on his training camp tour. Here's what he said about the Jags. Saw a Friday night scrimmage in the stadium, and this defense is finally looking like a playoff unit. Dante Fowler and Malik Jackson will be beasts. And the secondary, other than Jonathan Cyprian, is almost all new. Devon House as well, obviously. Then there's year three of Blake Bortles, who threw 35 touchdowns last season and then spent lots of chemistry time with Allen Robinson in the offseason, and he quotes Robinson's stats from last year. The Jags should be in contention for the AFC South title into late December.
Well, you remember what he told Rick Ballew on the sideline when he visited. This is what he told Rick.
Just overall talent-wise, how much better do the Jaguars look this year?
This is one of the most changed teams I've seen in years. You know, because so many guys coming back from injury and so many guys added, you know, in free agency in the draft.
Here's the thing. Teams do occasionally make big leaps.
They do.
Right? I mean, and we've cited certain specific examples of them over the last several years, Tony, at times when we get impatient with the progress or lack of progress, seemingly. And this goes back prior to Gus Bradley and prior to Dave Caldwell. Just the team seemed to be stuck in a rut, and you always hear, well, it takes time to rebuild it. Well, the way they did it, it does. But now that they have, and you hear this talk, well, you got to mold all these guys and mesh them together and all these different things. And yes, that is the case, but we've seen teams make that leap. We've cited specifically teams like Atlanta and Baltimore went from four-win teams to double-digit win teams. Now, they added Flacco and Ryan, or Ryan and Flacco, in their rookie seasons. They catapulted them. The Jags, though, have a quarterback in place who we feel is going to get better, but they've seemingly improved, at least on paper, in a lot of other areas. And if that offensive line doesn't turn out to be a sore spot, they could be exceptional on that side of the football.
No, they could be. And Kansas City was one of those teams a couple years ago, basically when Andy Reid got there. They went from a cellar dweller to a team that's been really competitive for the last 2 years with Andy Reid as the head coach. You don't know exactly what has to happen every time for these teams to click, right? And they just do. And in the NFL, you know, when two-thirds basically of playoff teams are turning over every year, it means that there's a lot of parity in this league where we talk about the difference for this Jaguars team on defense being, can they get off the field on third down? And when we talk about that, we've said it over and over again, it's not that they need to get off the field on every third down, it's that they needed to get off the field on four of them last year that they didn't.
Right.
And how much could that potentially change it? I talked last night about Blake Bortles and everyone talking about the garbage time stats for Blake Bortles. Well, maybe Blake is just the guy who's really good in the fourth quarter, and his defense has been so terrible for 2 years that his ability in the fourth quarter to elevate his play doesn't matter because they're down two touchdowns. Right? Because they're down 10 points, 14 points, and him leading another touchdown drive just means, well, they only lose by 10, you know, this week, as opposed to now he's getting the ball with a chance to win the game. I know he's capable of that because I saw him do it against Buffalo last year in London. It's a question of, can they put themselves in position to win more football games this year? And there are a lot of indications that, yes, they should be better on defense because they're just bigger, faster, more athletic on the defensive side of the ball. And they got a young pieces on offense that should be growing up together a little bit this year. The signs from the running game have been positive through the first couple games of the preseason. They never had that at any point in last season. So there are a lot of reasons to feel optimistic about what this Jaguars team could be in 2016.
I had a dream about the regular season last night or in the early morning hours. Sometimes you wake up and you remember what you dreamt about, and I dreamt they had just lost a heartbreaker on the road to San Diego by a score of 17-14. I truly had this dream. They were trying to come back, and their comeback fell short in the fourth quarter. They lost 17-14 to fall to 1-1 on the season. So they had beaten the Green Bay Packers in the opener. Would you take that right now? Would you?
One and one coming out of the first two games. Sure.
Oh man.
I would rather. If they beat Green Bay, my expectations are going to be they're going to beat San Diego.
You're going to feel like, man, we got one in the bag. Let's go for the whole thing here. Let's not settle for it. But if you're coming out of the gates, would you take that? Oh, boy.
With the idea of Baltimore coming here, which should be a game that they could win.
Right. As we said, too, those first four games, they get progressively more important to the football team in terms of tiebreakers. Obviously, the Colts game, the most important. It's a division game. Then Baltimore is a conference home game, and you got to protect your home field. And then, of course, San Diego being a conference game compared to Green Bay being a non-conference game, that's the least likely to factor into any kind of playoff scenarios. Look, every win matters. There's no question about it. Some just matter a little bit more than others. Win them all. Go 4-0 and have a very enjoyable bye week. That'd be spectacular. 6-4-1-10-10. But talking about Blake Bortles, Tony, a lot of people have already brought his name up as being a candidate to go down as the greatest player at his position in Jaguar history. And I think that's certainly plausible. Mark Brunell's a three-time Pro Bowler, and he was a winner, too. And that was a big thing. He went to two AFC title games. Blake's going to have to match him beginning quickly, you know, in terms of winning and just being a consistent playoff-bound quarterback, a guy who can direct the talent that he has around him to get the most out of it. And for the most part, I think even though there are probably a lot of fans that feel like the Jags didn't get everything out of that 14-2 season, they felt like they were the best team in the National Football League. They came close to fulfilling their potential and maybe exceeded it in some cases, like in 1996. So I definitely think Bortles is in that conversation. Nobody's crowning any of these guys. You just look at them, and there's certain positions. There's certain guys on the team you're like, well, you know, good player. Is he the best at his position or potentially the best at his position in team history? Probably not. With some of them, I think some of it has to do with the positions you're talking about. I could easily see Dante Fowler being the best edge rusher in team history because the bar is pretty low. Tony Bracken's a hell of a player, but he didn't have the longevity. Now, we haven't seen an iota out of Dante Fowler Jr. yet, but I think he's got that potential. You know, you're kind of going on a little bit of blind faith on him.
Yeah, 55 career sacks for Tony Bracken here in Jacksonville. That certainly is an attainable number. Now, nobody else is close. Right, and we are talking about Dante starting with zero, so it's a long way to go to get to that kind of level when you're talking about guys who could potentially be the best in franchise history. I think it depends on what kind of run do you think they're setting up for. You know, Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley have had a plan in place, and the plan was to, it may take 3 years, but we're going to get to a point where we're not good for a year, we're good for 10. Right. And if they are a football team and a franchise that is set up to be successful for that long a period of time, and we're not even talking about, you know, a 4 or 5 year run like the Jaguars basically had there in 96 to 2000, essentially. But you're talking about a team that can stay consistent for that decade, which if they're going to be that, you would think it would be with Blake Bortles, then he would be almost a lock for best quarterback in franchise history if they are going to make that kind of run. The question, I guess, becomes, do you believe they're really set for that kind of stage here in Jacksonville, where they are a team that feels like they're set for a long-term, sustained run of success in the NFL? They haven't had any short-term in the past 3 years. Do you feel like not only will they be good in 2016, but are they still going to be good in 2020? You know, with this same group of core guys, I think there's optimism about that, but it's certainly unanswered.
I mean, honestly, that, you know, they could be. You hate to get your hopes up only to have them dash, but who says they have to be dashed? Right now, I could very easily envision a scenario where this team rips off a run at division titles beginning immediately, right now. And I only think they're going to get stronger, Tony. I really do. You look the way they built it. If this team is as good as they feel it can be, if it can take that step, you've got the core parts in place locked up, as you said, for a long time to maybe go on the greatest extended run in this team's history. Now, that's saying a lot because they haven't done squat yet, right? I mean, they're in a position where they're basically coming into the season like it's 1996 and you haven't proven anything. So go out and prove it. You know, go out and go 9-7 or 10-6 and make it to the postseason and maybe sneak a game or a couple even. And then you'd be well on your way to kind of getting down that path. 641-1010 if you want to get in on that or anything else Jaguar related on the phone lines or on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Which we'll get to here coming up in just a minute. We'll also check in with Gus Bradley, what he had to say following yesterday's practice for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they get ready to take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars will take the field today as they prepare for Cincinnati, who comes into town on Sunday for the third preseason game of the year. Head coach Gus Bradley has been impressed with the defense, including free safety Tashawn Gibson.
Sometimes you don't notice them. Sometimes we had plays last year where you felt like, oh, the free safety had a chance to make the play, and we didn't. And with him back there, it's like we don't have those conversations. He had a couple tackles and was in good spots as far as where his drops were. So he took some things away because of that. So it kind of appears silent, like he wasn't involved much. But as coaching staff and seeing this game, we appreciate it.
We have a big congratulations in store for Prince Amukamara, who missed practice following the birth of his son late Monday evening. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we were talking about the potential this team has this year,
yeah,
in the future, what have you. This is on the text line. I agree. I'm assuming you agree because we were in the midst of talking about how, you know, this team could potentially get on a run over the next few years, which is saying a lot because they haven't proven anything in the one loss column yet. But if you just look at the roster and the talent and everything. So this texture says, Mike, I agree. I'm assuming they're agreeing with what they could do. But Sunday should be a good gauge. If they look poor, then here we go. If they don't start fast like they say they want to and don't, we have a huge issue. But for now, I'm positive. So if they don't start fast in one preseason game, now we've got a huge issue? Is that what that is?
Apparently.
I guess that's how I'm
We suck again!
I think there's potential. Look, it feels like there's a momentum to what the Jaguars have done through the first 2 weeks of the preseason, right? And there's the opportunity coming up on Sunday with the Bengals coming into town, and it's really the last time that you're going to get any good look at the starters. If they play at all in week four, it won't be much of the preseason up in Atlanta. So there's an opportunity to continue whatever momentum they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball where they've been outstanding through the first couple weeks of the preseason. So could potentially they dash some of that momentum that you carry out of a preseason? Maybe, but I don't know how much that means when everything is said and done when Green Bay gets here. I think everyone feels better if they're good on Sunday night.
And guess what? They could score on their first three drives on Sunday night and throw up a goose egg against Green Bay,
right,
too.
And on that first drive against Green Bay, if they don't score points, it doesn't matter what they did in the preseason. Everything they did in the preseason is now as irrelevant as it actually is. Right, when they get the ball for the first time against Green Bay, that's all it's going to matter. We talk about what happens in the preseason because that's what's happening right now. Right? Like, it's the immediate thing that's happening right now, but in the bigger scheme of things, preseason football means nothing to the success or failure of this football team in 2016. When they kick it off against Green Bay, it doesn't matter how much success they had against Cincinnati. It just doesn't matter when we get there. Would it be nice if they continue to hang on to this momentum? Yeah, it'd be nice, but it's not the most important thing in the world either.
Also on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, the city of Jacksonville wants you off the radio.
I love that guy.
Just thought I'd pass that along.
He's got some personal thing against me. And just for him...
He speaks for the city of Jacksonville,
apparently.
Tony.
Just for him, I do want to plug my Facebook page since he hates how long my posts are on my Facebook page. So if you want to go to facebook.com/FatTonyShow, I would appreciate that. And one more time for that guy as well. Miles Jack was my favorite guy in the 2016 NFL draft.
Does he have an issue with that?
Apparently. He's like, how many times are you going to say that Miles Jack was your favorite guy in the draft? One more time.
That makes at least one more.
Jack was my favorite guy in the 2016 draft.
By the way, Fat Tony's show on hiatus now for a little while?
Yeah. No more Fat Tuesdays, at least until after football season. Then we'll figure it out. I'm trying to work out what I'm going to do with the box office breakdown. And I don't know if that's going to be something where I put it on the 1010XL.com website as a podcast, or if I decide I'm going to Periscope it or Facebook Live or do something like that. But I have a couple ideas. I just got to work them out and get it done.
Just type it all out in a long Facebook post. You ought to be fine, I would imagine, with that. We begin our, I don't know what year this is, of your Jack's fantasy football, but it's been several over on CW17. This weekend we're going to do a couple of weeks of draft prep for fantasy football folks out there. And this week, the first half of the show, we're going to focus in on the Jags from a fantasy perspective. And there's a lot to focus on.
Things to talk about.
Passing game, one segment, running game, the next. And, you know, what are our expectations, where these guys are coming off the board in drafts, and how you can best capitalize. Of course, if you're drafting in Jacksonville, you might have to add that hometown premium if you want them. Yeah, that's kind of the phenomenon, right? I have people call me up on the satellite show, and they're like, hey, I can get such and such. I can get these three guys for Antonio Brown. As good as Antonio Brown is, like, wow, that's quite a bit. Oh, they're calling from Pennsylvania. See, that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. The hometown, a lot of hometown fans just want to double dip and be able to root for their team and their players on Sunday, and that's fine. But you can watch for that coming up. They air Saturday nights at 11, okay? So right before your Saturday Night Live viewing comes into play. And also Sunday mornings at 11:30. You'll get those throughout the season, all the way up through at least week 16 when most leagues have their championship games. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley yesterday, and we won't get to all of it right now, but this was how he opened up his comments after practice, including congratulating Prince Amukamara on the birth of his baby boy yesterday.
I'll start off first by congratulating Prince and his family. They had a late last night, birth of a baby boy. So he wasn't at practice today, but good time for him and his family. Good practice today. It was a little bit cut back. And when we come off a player's day off, more situations, less individual, and just getting back in the flow and work out, you know, get some running in. So third down, red zone, 2 minutes, and situations that we felt like we need to address continually. And as far as game planning for Cincinnati, we'll do that this week. This will be like as close to a week as we can to replicate an in-season week. Run reports, you know, making sure we got all the information we need. So we'll go through the process part of it and make sure if there's anything we need to get worked out prior to our first game, we will. So it's a good week for our players to get an understanding of how the meetings are going to be handled as well.
Somebody just tweeted in, and I assume this is because they don't believe Gus Bradley's the guy to get the job done. Says, I like how we're speculating like Gus Bradley isn't the head coach. I'm assuming that's what that means, right? Because nobody's suggesting here they're going to go on a run when they get a new head coach, or they could potentially do that. So I assume he's saying, well, all this highfalutin speculation about their potential, you have to come back to the sobering reality that you don't have the right guy in the job. That's how I read that tweet. Hey, look, he's got to
find out.
We're going to find out, exactly. Right? If he doesn't get it done this year, I think Gus Bradley's in major trouble. Now, getting it done to my standards and Shad Khan's standards might not be the same thing, but Shad reiterated last week, it's winning time.
Yeah, you get better, you get more talented, and the answers as to why aren't they achieving what they should be achieving become a little simpler, right? If you have the ingredients, then it's the cook that just isn't putting everything together. So they've replaced both coordinators. Now, here since Gus Bradley got here, they've replaced the offensive and defensive coordinator. Everyone seems to think that the talent level has significantly increased for this franchise. So if in 2016 they don't achieve some level of success, and what that is, again, we don't know what that means for those guys, right? Like, we just don't know what Shad Khan equates successful in 2016 to mean. But if they don't achieve that, then Gus Bradley is the head that's on the table.
Right.
There's nobody else that's really in trouble in that kind of regard this year, and that means his staff would be in trouble. But it's they achieve whatever they need to achieve this year, or Gus Bradley's out. I mean, it's kind of that simple for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bradley talking after practice yesterday. Tashawn Gibson, one of those free agent additions for the Jags this year, made his debut in a Jaguars uniform this past Saturday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Gus said he was impressed by him.
Sometimes you don't notice them. Sometimes we had plays last year where you felt like, oh, the free safety had a chance to make the play, and we didn't. And with him back there, it's like we don't have those conversations. He had a couple tackles and was in good spots as far as where his drops were. So he took some things away because of that. So it kind of appears silent, like he wasn't involved much. But as coaching staff and seeing the scheme, we appreciate him.
All right, that's a little bit on Tayshawn Gibson. We got a lot more from Gus coming up, but we got to hit the break right here. So we'll do that coming back with this State in Football and the Honda Driver on the NFL. On Twitter, Tony, from Knox Alexander at Chaos Knox, could we see a situation where Kelvin Beachum is left tackle and Chris Reed is the guard with Joku coming off the bench? I don't think
not as well as he's played.
Right, and not to open the season, certainly, yeah. At this point. They have every incentive to want to have Joku play because of the investment they have in him, and he has played fairly well to this point in time. Now, we haven't seen him in game reps playing guard yet, so is it possible that that turns out to be not the best combination? Maybe. But I don't think you're going to see that to open the season. There's very little chance of that.
And the way Gus was talking about it, I mean, Luke had one of his best games in a Jaguars uniform.
Most physical game, he said,
against
that he's
played. Bucks. I mean, and that's high praise for a guy that's been the question mark with him, is that physicality. And if he's showing that kind of thing, I can't imagine a scenario at this point that if Luke Joku's healthy, he's playing football somewhere on this offensive line.
Speaking of high praise, Gus also used the S word to describe one of his players.
Ooh.
We've got that coming up.
Solid.
Yes. Who is it?
What the heck does that mean?
Who is he referring to? He actually gets into what that means a little bit more coming up.
He's going to redefine it? He's defined it before for us.
He kind of has, and it makes me think he's a listener to Jaguars Today as much as we pound that it's solid from Gus Bradley. As what does he say? As you guys know, what was the exact phrasing he used to describe it the first time? As you guys know, when I say that,
it means he needs to get better or
something like that.
Right, something
like that. He's not quite up to what we're looking for.
If I say solid, you know what that means.
Right, exactly. In a moment of clarity, Gus admitted that. All right, coming back this State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this State in Football History.
All right, let's get down to it. This State in Football History as we go back on August 24th to 1979. The New England Patriots were looking to upgrade. They had the Patriot logo. We all have seen the guy in the Patriot uniform snapping the football on the side of the helmet.
Yeah.
And they decided we want to upgrade now. They had a couple of things that they were trying in 1979. One of them was to come off the success of the Superman movie starring Christopher Reeves to come up with something called Super Patriot. You may have heard of something along those lines, right? If you haven't, just Google it, all right? Or ask Dan Hicken. He knows all about it.
Yeah, you may need to shorten it.
The other was a logo. Yeah, Super Pat.
Yeah.
They could probably be catchier. The other was a logo that was like the American flag with the red and white stripes, and the field of blue was kind of like a Patriot head. And actually, it looked better than I'm describing it, but they brought it up for a vote at halftime of a preseason game. First, they rolled out the new logo to tepid applause, and then they rolled out the old Pat the Patriot, and forget it, it was over with. So all the money they spent on marketing and research firms out the window, as they could have just hold their fans ahead of time. Do you want to keep Pat the Patriot? Apparently, overwhelmingly, they said yes on this date. 1992, Cleveland Browns. Think about the Cleveland Browns. They haven't been good for a long time, for the most part, right? Occasionally, they pop up. Suffer their worst preseason loss ever at the time, 56-3 in the preseason. Wow. And you think this team's got problems because they're not winning games in the preseason? You know who I'm talking to out there.
What year was that?
That was 1992. 56-3. That was Belichick, right? Belichick was coaching them 56-3. I'm sure there were people going crazy, of course. I don't know if in 92, what did the Browns do in 92? He didn't take them to the playoffs in one of those years, I believe, back in the day. Famous birthdays for this date, 1986. Time to trade him. He's officially 30. Arian Foster, once you cross that barrier, it seems to go poorly for running backs. 30 years old today, four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first team All-Pro, and now looks to be the guy to own in the Dolphins' backfield if you're playing fantasy football, at least as long as that Achilles holds up. And most importantly, happy birthday in the state in 1993 to Allen Robinson, 23 years young today and already a one-time Pro Bowler. Happy birthday to Donna Murphy as well. She is a football show on Twitter. Give her a follow.
Yeah, give her a follow. The 1992 Cleveland Browns went 7-9 with Mike Tomczak as their leading passer.
So they were almost the 500 team after losing 56-3 in the preseason, the worst loss in franchise history. Keep that in mind if the final score at the end of 60 minutes of the preseason isn't in favor of the team you like. All right, there you have it. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Ian Rappaport is saying that the New England Patriots are going to release starting center Brian Stork today. Stork, who is currently listed as the starter on the Patriots depth chart, was a fourth-round pick in 2014 out of Florida State. It seems likely that at least one team would probably claim Stork on waivers, but we will see. The team is also releasing veteran wide receiver Nate Washington today. He wasn't expected to make the Patriots' final roster. The heat in Tampa Bay on rookie kicker Roberto Aguayo continues to get turned up. During practice yesterday, Bucs fans were actually taunting Aguayo, booing when he missed the kick, which was a handful, including one that was termed as, quote, the worst practice shank I've ever seen by one onlooker on Twitter. And the crowd would send up a Bronx cheer whenever Aguayo actually made one. I think we actually have some audio from down there at practice, don't we, Tyler?
You can do it!
the fans chanting
no,
that.
No, you can't!
As he lined up to kick some kicks. Aguayo has called the problems mental. He has talked to former NFL kicker Ryan Longwell and a mental coach in the past week to try and get over his current case of the yips. The Buccaneers still standing behind the second-round pick that they gave up a third- and fourth-round pick in this year's draft to move up.
You can do it!
And get. And former Jacksonville Jaguars defensive end Jerry Mincy announced his retirement yesterday. While his exit from Jacksonville was not the prettiest, Mincy's 20 sacks in a Jaguars uniform, since we were talking about A-Rob needs 1,000 yards to move him to number four all-time on the receiving list. Mincy's 20 sacks in a Jaguars uniform places him 11th all-time in franchise history.
Just outside the top 10 for the Mince Man. He got his money, though. Hopefully he's smart about it. He had a decent career. For a seventh-round draft pick, he hung around for quite a while.
Yeah, he was fun.
You know, he's an okay player. You know, he certainly exceeded expectations, I think, as a seventh-round draft pick. Got a couple of things we'll get to here. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the number, both for the phones and for the text line, driven by Duval Ford. We'll get back to Gus Bradley here coming up in a few minutes, Tony. I did come across, and I'm sure many have seen, the Ultimate Madden NFL 17 preview at ESPN.com, where they basically highlight which players have the highest rankings in the various categories. You know, I haven't played Madden, and I can't tell you when. I think I've mentioned it. The last copy of Madden I had was the one with Mike Vick on the cover. That's been a while.
It was, what, 04?
So, I think it was something like 04, you know, back in the day, something like that. Anyway, a lot of people still big into Madden, and it is eerie as you scroll through this article that when you realize, oh, wait, these aren't photos of the players. These are the players as they're actually depicted in these high-def graphics. It's
gotten ridiculous.
Mind-blowing compared to the little sprites. I told
you. Oh, no.
I got
There's
the,
a man down.
Oh, no. Pat Summerall, man. Maybe the greatest line he ever uttered. God rest in peace, Pat. Oh, no.
When
There's
the
man down.
The ambulance would come out and actually run over players to get to the
terrific,
injured player.
Man. Right. The one hurt guy would get the escort off the field, and the rest of the team is left in bloody shambles on the field. I told you, I got the Ultimate Sega Genesis Collection, you know, because that was – that when Sega Genesis came out, it was such a leap ahead of the Atari platforms at the time. I was never a Nintendo guy. And so, like, my real heyday of video gaming was with the Sega Genesis. Mm-hmm. And so I got one of those discs that has, you know, like 30 or 50 or however many games on there. I really just got it to play Kid Chameleon because it's such a fun game. But it's fun. My son actually will play that game with me. You know, because now you play, you know, everything that's not 360 degrees of freedom of movement is just, what is that, Dad? It's trash. But it won't go for the side scrollers, though. Still won't go for the just
really?
The, you know, like the Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
Right? The games like that. I mean, I guess Kid Chameleon is kind of a side scrolling game, but it's got a lot of different elements to it. And so, anyway, it just has changed quite a bit. The players ranked with 99. So have you looked at this, by the way? Have you seen any of the rankings? Four players got a 99 ranking in the entire league at any position on Madden football, Madden 17. Who do you got?
Gronk.
Gronk is one of them.
I don't think Brady did.
All the rest on defense.
Yeah, I don't think Brady did. All the rest on defense. Von Miller?
Von Miller. Come on.
Is it at what position?
Defense. I'm going to give you.
Defense.
Do you really need me? All right, defensive end.
Defensive end. Why can't I think of a guy?
I don't know.
J.J. Watt.
There you go. Overrated.
And
one more linebacker. Who's best linebacker in football?
Oh, Luke Kuechly.
There you go. At least that's the consensus. Those are the four guys who got the 99. Best rookie rating of anyone in the National Football League went to whom, do you think?
My guess would be Ezekiel Elliott.
Jalen Ramsey, baby!
Oh, yeah.
Back off, everybody. We got him. He got an 82. Ezekiel Elliott came in at an 80. Uh-oh, though. Roberto Aguayo got a 79. Oh, dear. Joey Bosa, who may not be playing anytime soon.
Holy cow.
Still holding out. He got a 79, and so did Ronnie Stanley. So, Ronnie Stanley.
Stanley's been good.
Right, but are you telling me that the pot smoking has dropped Laremy Tunsil now below Ronnie Stanley, that he's now the consensus at best number two offensive lineman in the rookie class?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure about that. Best awareness rating, who cares? But Brady and Antonio Brown got 99s in that. Breeze, Fitzgerald, and Kuechly got 98s in that. Best speed rating, Tony.
They determined that.
I don't know. Best awareness, I don't know. I don't know. Best speed rating seems more like a pure metric that you could get into. How about Corey Grant being tied for the top spot? That's pretty good deep recognition, right?
I mean, pretty cool, yeah.
I don't know if you line Corey Grant up against the rest of the players in the league if he is the right there at the very top. Philip Dorsett is a guy I would have thought of maybe first, and he is tied as well. They got 96 rankings. Brandon Cooks of the Saints, Philip Dorsett, Jakeem Grant with the Dolphins, who I talked with Orlando Alzigary a couple days ago. He thinks he could be a big, not a high-volume guy, but a big-time playmaking weapon in that that offense as a pass-catching specialist. He's listed as a wide receiver. He's kind of a hybrid wide receiver running back.
He's not a big guy.
No, he's not. And so you're going to have to manage his touches. But everybody thought Kenyon Drake was going to come in and be the big pass-catching back in Miami. He thinks Grant may be that guy. We mentioned Corey Grant and then J.J. Nelson of the Cardinals also tying for first and best speed rating. Agility, Antonio Brown, LeSean McCoy, Tavon Austin all tied for number one. None of the Jags tying for the top couple of spots in strength. Ndamukong Suh among those, getting the highest score there. Best overall offenses, Steelers, Panthers, and the Cardinals. I think the Jags honestly could challenge. Biggest surprise, they said, was the Oakland Raiders. Same team ranked 23rd in points per game in weeks 10 through 17, tied for fourth in Madden's offense rankings. A lot of people expect big things out of them. Chiefs, Broncos, and Patriots in that order defensively. And best overall teams, Panthers and Patriots tied with an overall grade of 87. The Packers, Chiefs, Steelers, and Seahawks tied with 85. So there you have it if you care about that kind of thing.
When these ratings got released about 3 weeks ago, there was a big uproar because Blake Bortles was listed as an 82 overall, and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, Eli Manning, was 81.
Oh, dear.
So people in New York were upset because he's won Super Bowl, so he's better than Blake.
Well,
but I think that brings up a good question. Which quarterback would you rather have for this year?
Right.
I think it's hands down Blake, but that's just me.
I don't know if it's hands down Blake. I mean, you know, Eli gets crushed sometimes. He has won two Super Bowls, and he's been pretty damn good the last couple of years.
Last year.
Right. I mean, under McAdoo's offense, who's now the head coach, and now they add Sterling Shepard to the mix, who they've been raving about.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eli's played really well the last couple of years. And right now, I mean, is Blake capable of having a better season than Eli Manning? Absolutely. I don't think it's a laydown, though. And I think most GMs around the league would take Eli as well if they're actually just trying to win football games
for
and lead
year?
Their team. For this year,
right.
Yeah, I do. Now,
still throws too many picks for a guy as well into his career as
right,
he is.
Right, but you're comparing
if you look
to the guy who led the league.
Yeah,
too.
If you look at Eli Manning last year, he threw for 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns, and 14 picks.
That was Eli?
That was Eli.
Right, which is almost identical to Blake with fewer interceptions.
Yeah.
Right? So, and again, he's got...
And he's 65-28 touchdown to interception in the last 2 years under McAdoo.
Hey, fan bases get fired up about all kinds of perceived slights, so that's fine, whatever. I just thought it was cool to see Jalen Ramsey rated as the best rookie. And
that's
I do
cool.
I do think that's pretty good... You know, if you're going deep enough to know that Corey Grant should be considered one of the fastest players in the National Football League. I don't know if they're basing this just on 40 times or what exactly they're basing it on, but that's kind of cool to see that they've, you know, not just brushed off and they've actually gone through that deep on every roster to try to figure out, because, you know, some of those other guys, Philip Dorsett's going to be on the field a lot for that offense this year. You don't expect Corey Grant to do much other than return kickoffs, have the occasional change of pace play in the backfield,
right?
I think. All right, coming back, we'll hear more from Gus Bradley. What does he have to say about his offensive line? He talks a lot about that in some of his comments post-practice yesterday. Jags on the practice field right now, I believe, as a matter of fact. They're practicing a little bit later today and tomorrow. They'll wrap up earlier on Friday and then probably just have a walkthrough on Saturday as they get ready for Sunday night football, Jags and the Bengals. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we got more Gus coming your way here in a second. We'll get to the phone lines as well at 641-1010 on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Help my fantasy name this year. I need help picking. Teal is the new black. Okay. Or Game of Cons, which you like better?
I like Game of Cons better.
Do you?
Yeah.
Tyler, Game of Cons, Teal
Game
is a New Black.
Yeah. Game of Cons.
I like Teal is a New Black. So I'm outvoted. I told you, I think I told you yesterday off the air, the best one I'd heard in a while, somebody on Twitter followed me whose name is Demarius Targaryen, and then in the description on Twitter, it said mover of chains. I just thought that was brilliant. And if you don't get it, then you don't watch Game of Thrones, and that's okay.
Right.
But Daenerys Targaryen is the breaker of chains. And Daenerys, and they had morphed Daenerys' face on Daenerys' body, which is a sacrilege. But nevertheless, I thought that was pretty clever.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Nicely done. Oh, by the way, we have tickets. We have tickets.
Got a pair.
We got spots. That reminded me as well. We got a lot of spots in a lot of fantasy leagues we need to fill.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that today. I will say this, though.
We basically got next week to do that.
Yes, and we got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Right? We're drafting a week, less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
2 weeks from this past Monday and 2 weeks from Tuesday. So the Monday and Tuesday of opening week of the NFL season, we'll have a draft each night. 12 teams, point per reception leagues. We'll host it on ESPN. It's free. To get in. And one stipulation, as we always say, and we don't always adhere to this, if you've won anything in the last 30 days, you're not allowed to win something else. That includes entry into the Hacker Fantasy League. We just want to spread the wealth. If you're in the Hacker Fantasy League, congratulations. It's a great league. It's always a lot of fun. You cannot be in both. That's just the way it goes. You know, good luck to you. Let's get Jerome on the west side up next here on 1010XL. Good morning,
before we
Jerome.
Go to Jerome.
Before we go to Jerome, hold on, Jerome.
How do you want to do the tickets? You want to do?
I haven't thought about it yet.
All right, we'll think about it.
We'll think about that. Jerome, how should we give away tickets? What do you think?
I don't know.
All right.
Good question. The correct answer was give them to me, Jerome.
Right. We would have thought you would have said just give them to me and that'll take care of it, but opportunity missed right there, Jerome. What can we do for you this morning?
I got a question for you, though. I noticed, like, a lot of, like, good coaches, they pay a lot of attention to, like, details. Do you think that, like, for us to be having, like, busted coverage, like, when we played against the Jets and Fitzpatrick went back-to-back in the middle of the field with the tight end or the slot receiver, we're known for that, you know? Like, every year we're known for giving up, like, whether it's tight ends or anywhere in the middle of the field, we're known for giving up big plays like that. And is that on the coaching's? I mean, these players are like, they're not rookies no more. Shouldn't they really, like, know what they're supposed to be doing in their positions or something? You know what I mean?
Let me ask you, I'm not trying to be facetious. Don't you think they do tell, like, hey, Telvin Smith, don't bite on the fake to the running back, because that's what happened in the game. I mean, it's not like coaches are oblivious, in my opinion, Jerome, and I get it what you're saying. They've had a tough time covering tight ends over in recent vintage, right? They haven't had the players. Hopefully Miles Jack will be a guy that can really make an impact in that regard, plus the presence of Gibson and Ramsey on the back line to just make everything tighter as a whole. But, I mean, Tony, I'm quite sure that any coach watching film has instructed these guys, like, you can't, as David Garrard said, he went for the cheese. They show you the cheese. They show you the back coming out of the backfield. You can't bite on it. When you see the ball going there, you got to react. Telvin bit and reacted, which opened things up. It's not like the coaching staff. Robert Saleh is the linebackers coach. You think he's not telling Telvin Smith you can't do that? I mean, Telvin's a talented guy that lets sometimes his emotion get in the way of his effectiveness on the football field. I don't, you know, look, in the end, Gus Bradley's going to be held accountable for everything if he fails to win, right? So, but I, you know, so I don't know. Is Gus as good at attention to detail as Bill Belichick? Maybe not. But when I look at a busted coverage, I don't say, damn, the coaching staff really must not have told them to play that the proper way.
No, I don't think about it that way. I do think about, I don't know that this team has been talented enough to hold the players accountable in the same way that Belichick has. You know, for the past decade, when guys make those kind of mistakes for Belichick, they're off the field. You know, he gives somebody else an opportunity to get out there. And, you know, we talked about it last year when they benched Devon House, which still makes no sense to me. Why House is the guy you're going to bench for a week out of the starting lineup. Just, he's the only guy that was making plays in the secondary at that point for the Jags, and he's the guy that they pulled off the field to send some kind of message. It didn't make sense. I don't know if it's a matter of they didn't have anyone else that they thought they could trust to be out there on the field, and maybe this year they finally do. So when that kind of stuff happens, maybe Telvin comes off the field and say, all right, Miles, you're running the weak side. You know, I don't know. You know, I just don't know if they haven't had those guys. But again, I think the answers to why things aren't going to work this year become more clarified because the level of talent is coming up in Jacksonville. And I think there is an opportunity with competition. It's the ultimate accountability factor. And it should be rising here in Jacksonville. So when you see guys making those mistakes, I think there's a significant chance this year compared to past years they just get pulled off the field and someone else gets a chance to do it.
Right, much like with penalties, right? I think it's the same thing. If you make stupid penalties, you need to be held accountable for them. Again, I don't know what coaching staff wouldn't rip a guy for making a stupid penalty. You know, what did Greg Olsen do a good job last year? Well, wait a minute. Where was his attention to detail in not telling Blake to not throw 18 interceptions last year? I mean, players are performing within the structure of what you're putting out there, and they're fallible, you know, and it's a growing process. And maybe Blake will always be a guy who throws a lot of interceptions. I don't know. But it's not like I don't look at that and say, well, coaches are just not telling them the attention to detail is just not there. Mistakes happen a lot, and you've got to have players that are capable of executing your vision for what you want to see happen on the field. Again, I'm not trying to make excuses for Gus Bradley or anything else. His record is what he's going to have to defend at the end of the year.
No doubt.
Right? So, and as Tony and I said, for us, we wouldn't have been so forthcoming with another year on the contract. You win 12 games in 3 years. To me, that's not good enough, no matter what stage of development you're in the National Football League. That's me. Okay? They obviously felt that they're going along, proceeding, and according to the plan, and see everything still within that vision. You know, you got the cone of concern with the hurricane. You've got that cone of what you predict where this franchise is going to head. Are you still within that? Are you veering off course? They still felt they were within that. They see big things coming. Maybe they're right in believing in Gus and keeping him around. Maybe they're not. This season will go a long way to determining that. But I don't look at that and say, man, that Gus Bradley, he's just not telling these guys to cover tight ends. He forgot. He said, 10 other guys out there, you got them. We'll worry about the tight end later. It's not, you know, I know that's not exactly what you're saying, Jerome, but that's how it comes across to me a little bit when you see guys make a mistake in a preseason game and then a question, don't the coaches coach them to do it differently? Well, yeah, they do. And that's why some players are great. Some players are Hall of Famers. Others are Pro Bowlers. Others are good starters. Others are backups. And others are out of the league and many variations in between. They don't always execute it to perfection. Jerome, thank you for the call. Let's go to Joe on the south side next up. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Great. Two questions. One, I've been watching, you know, Hard Knocks like maybe a lot of folks, and just noticed that, you know, the last couple of years we've got the Rams, we've got, you know, the Texans, the Jets, and is our locker room like that? Is Gus like that? Is it F-bombs every other word? And not that, you know, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just kind of curious from a locker room perspective. Are all the coaches, is that just the way every locker room is? And the second question is, as a player, like, we're all adults, right? I can't think of a work environment where they're like, you know, you better, you know, it's not so much the language, but the kind of the demeanor or the demeaning way they, you know, as far as a motivator goes, do people really respond to that?
Some people do. I think, Joe, I read a famous quote. I don't know if it's famous. It's one that stuck in my head for years. Terry Bradshaw said, you know, there's some guys that if they chew you out, that you respond to that. And I'm mixing up his quote, but basically he was saying, I was the kind of guy I needed a pat on the ass instead of a chewing out, okay? And I responded more to that positive reinforcement, but other guys needed someone to chew their ass,
right?
And there's different motivations. Do I think, look, for one thing, we're not in the locker room for the most part when the doors are closed and Gus Bradley's in there addressing his players. You see a little bit of that after the game, but he knows cameras are rolling in there. And so I think you're going to conduct yourself differently. But Gus doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's dropping F-bombs every third word. You know what I mean?
He's not Aryan.
He can chew some tail when it's appropriate, but I don't think that – I mean, and these guys are men, and it's not your typical workplace environment, right? I mean, this is a world of machismo and all these things, and so there is some more of that gruff. Much like I imagine – you know, I've never been in the military, Tony, but I imagine – Marine Corps drill sergeants, right? They have a reputation of doing that, but what they do is they strip you down and then they build you back up, right? And, you know, if it's constantly just stripping you down, I don't think people react to that. But if it's done in a way that kind of say, all right, here's your mistakes. This is where everything has gone wrong. This is the right way to do it, and you build that guy back up. Look, Jeff Fisher, as much as we rip him, he's been able to stay employed for an awfully long time in the National Football League. So he's got to be doing something right. I think he's, you know, as we've often pointed out, his record indicates a lot more mediocrity than stratospheric success at times. But I do think, you know, you can't compare football to, you know, working at the public library or working at the grocery store or any other typical business. It is a different environment with different expectations and different allowances for behavior.
Yeah, and look, I don't know. I assume, because if you've watched any documentary about football at any kind of level, the language is there, right? And it's foul, and you just kind of have to, like, suck it up. It's like, all right, if I'm going to watch something where they're not editing what coaches and players are saying, you know, it's going to be a little offensive if you don't like foul language. And it's at any level. Any high school football documentary I've watched has been like that, with coaches talking to players. Any college documentary I've watched has been that way, with coaches talking to players and players talking to each other. Any NFL documentary I've ever watched has been that way. It's just part of football at this point. Now, as far as comparing the Jaguars locker room to the Rams, I have no idea. Right. And I don't know what it sounds like when we're not in there. I know, look, when they know when the cameras are there, and the media is in that room, and they're not going to be talking the way they do when we leave.
And right, and when the cameras are there on Hard Knocks, sometimes they're trying to send a message as well.
No doubt.
Like, this is the way the standard we hold players to and conduct ourselves.
And there's a certain theatrical nature to, you bring a bunch of cameras into an NFL locker room, I think everyone naturally is going to ham it up a little bit, right? Like, it's just natural when the cameras come around that kind of thing is going to go on a little bit, so maybe it's a little exaggerated. When the cameras get around these guys, but look, it's part of it. It's just part of football. And for the guys who get offended by language, I think about it when I walk in there. I'm like, I wonder if there is like two guys on this 90, right, who really just the language bothers them. And every day they come to work and they're like, I gotta listen to this guy say this bull crap.
I would imagine there probably are some like that.
You know, that it just bothers the daylights out of them. But it can't be many. You can't stick around long if you're gonna be offended by the harsh language in an NFL locker room.
By the way, Marine Corps drill instructor, I'm told. The drill sergeant is Army. You got the point. But no offense intended to our wonderful men and women in military service. All right, we got more from Gus Bradley coming up. What are you telling me?
Tickets.
Oh, so
tickets.
You want to slide the Steal the Show drop in one of the next two commercial breaks? We only got two left, so we could slide it in somewhere and say
We're doing this in such a well-thought-out manner. You know, people are complaining, hey, do something for the TuneIn app listeners because I'm always calling too late.
They're tough. They're like 2 minutes behind. It's tough to create something.
I don't
something,
know. What can we do? Wait, you have to wait 2 minutes to call.
And,
go.
And more than likely, if you're on your phone, you're probably not in the listening area, I would assume. Maybe at your desk somewhere, but turn on the radio.
All right.
Are we
going back to the old tried-and-true Steal the Show? Is that what we're doing?
People love her.
They do love her. I love her. Are you kidding me? All right. When you hear it, it's really a compressed amount of time right now. When you hear Steal the Show, be caller number 20,000. No, be caller number what? Four. How about four? Super? Perfect.
Could be this break. Could be next break.
Well, it could be during the segment. It could happen at any given time. Immediately, the phones start going. They're anticipating. No, it's not coming
not
this
segment.
Not going to win. All right. So anyway. Someone says on the text line, work in any intense environment, and that's the way it is. I don't know. that's the case, that any intense work environment produces, you know, that kind of sailor-like swearing, but whatever the case, you know, if, it's not for everybody. I understand that. And like Tony said, there probably are a few guys in every locker room that are like, oh, my gosh, football's great if it weren't for all the jerks that are associated with it, okay? Like Mike and Tony especially, all right? 641-1010 if you want to get in. More from Gus. We got to get to that coming up on the other side. And somebody will win a pair of tickets to Sunday Night Football preseason variety coming up straight ahead with the Jags and the Bengals on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Yesterday, National Cuban Sandwich Day. You know what? Every day can be Cuban Sandwich Day if you're a fan of Cuban sandwiches, because Dandy makes awesome sandwiches and subs of every manner, every variety, with delicious, fresh-made ingredients from only the best companies. Most of the bread baked here locally, but they go all the way to Tampa for their Cuban bread because it is that special at El Segundo Bakery, and they bring it to you in those Dandy and Anytime Deli classics right here at Circle K at Kangaroo Express. You pop in, whether that's lunchtime, breakfast now with the new breakfast sliders, maybe you like a little light fare, the new sandwich wraps that they have give you that kind of alternative, so be on the lookout for those as well. I like the tuna salad. You're going to find tons of varieties you like because Dandy's all about variety. They're all about quality. They're all about affordability. It's a great formula that they've had going for over six decades now. So whether it's lunchtime, breakfast time, anytime you're eating on the go, the name to remember, that's Dandy. Anytime you're hungry, folks, do what I do. Go out and make yours a Dandy today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars will take the field today as they prepare for Cincinnati, who comes into town on Sunday for the third preseason game of the year. Head coach Gus Bradley has been impressed with the defense, including free safety Tashawn Gibson.
Sometimes you don't notice them. Sometimes we had plays last year where you felt like, oh, the free safety had a chance to make the play, and we didn't. And with him back there, it's like we don't have those conversations. He had a couple tackles and was in good spots as far as where his drops were. So he took some things away because of that. So it kind of appears silent, like he wasn't involved much. But as coaching staff and seeing the scheme, we appreciate it.
We have a big congratulations in store for Prince Amukamara, who missed practice following the birth of his son late Monday evening. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
This is Alan Hearn, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, happy birthday to Alan Hearn's teammate in the wide receiver corps, Allen Robinson, 23 years young today. We have not given away tickets yet, right? Just to confirm?
Have not. Still be on the way.
Oh, still time. Still some time. Red hot in the next 8 to 10 minutes. You'll get your chance to go to Sunday Night Football. You've been waiting for it and waiting for it and waiting for it. We forgot about it, to be honest with you.
Certainly not.
Hey, easy, easy, easy.
Teasing
them. That's a tease. That's unfair. All right. Let's get to a little of this Gus audio that we've been meaning to get to. And let's skip around a little bit here. Let's go to the running back situation. Gus Bradley talking. This is after yesterday's practices. The guys are practicing now as well. Talking about Ivory and Yeldon and how that's working out with the two of them in the backfield.
I think they're really working well together, too. I mean, they constantly talk as much as you know those two would. But, you know, they just communicate. They really work well together, and they understand each other's role and their role. And, you know, we just want to keep them fresh and keep them going.
Boy, Yeldon looks like a different player, doesn't he?
He really does.
A much improved player.
And whether that's the fact that they brought in a guy like Ivory that's pushing him to that level, or if it's just the guy that's going into his second year in the league and is more comfortable, and that kind of talent that he had at Alabama showing up, it's a little bit more natural for him. It's a little bit easier for him. I don't know. Let's skip ahead while we're talking about the run game, too. Gus was asked about what is the difference. You know, it's been completely a different feel through the first couple games of the preseason. Gus was asked, what's the difference in the run game for this team this year? Is it Linder, Ivory, Yeldon? What is it?
I think it's a combination. You know, we're doing some things up front that are good. I think we've changed some of the run schemes that we're doing. But just I think the communication that's taking place up front, we talk about they really got to work well as a unit and communicate well. And I think, that, you know, Linder's really on it, really on it. And I think it starts right there and it spreads throughout. So it's just you can see it just their techniques. Give credit to Doug and John Benton. You know, they've been really tough on them on the techniques and the guys have bought into it. And when you have some success like that, it kind of carries it through. So the guys are really starting to believe in it.
All right. As far as Kevin Beachum goes, everyone wants to know, what's the status? Can he play this week? Will he play? Will he not play? How important is it for him to get on the field? Gus says it is important to see Beachum on the field.
He practiced today, went very well. He felt good. We'll see now tonight with the training room report. Am I hopeful? Yes. I'd love to see it that he comes back after today's practice. Good. We practice him again tomorrow and continue. So we're ready for anything, though, and we'll just stay true to it. But, yeah, our hopes is that he's ready to go.
Since we teased it earlier and we still haven't gotten to
it,
whatever the heck solid means in Gus Bradley's vocabulary, maybe he defines it for us again. He was talking about a third-string quarterback a couple of years ago, I think.
Was that what it was?
Morris.
Yeah.
It wasn't Stephen Morris,
it was
right?
Morris, yeah.
He's solid.
He's solid. You know, when I say solid, it means he needs to get better. Or something along those lines is what Gus said, defined it for us. But maybe he's redefining it. He says that Jeremy Parnell has been solid.
You know, we've had so many conversations about other guys. We don't look back and, you know, really see what he's accomplished. But he's just been very good. Very, you know, I know sometimes I say solid, you think, well, what does that mean? But he's been good. He's been good. He's not a guy that we talk much about because he just really does his job pretty well.
You get the sense there may be different definitions of the word solid, right?
Like, yeah.
Solid can be my least offensive way of saying nothing spectacular about this guy. And solid can also mean he's a steady, right? I mean, this seemed, and he even said good. He's been good, and he wanted to use the word solid,
he's solid
so badly, but he didn't. And then finally, this is another, this may be a classic, Gus.
An all-timer,
this
in my
opinion. This could be. This is Gus talking about Bjorn Werner and what kind of job he's done.
First game, you know, he came off, showed a good edge rush. So again, it's just consistency. You know, we need to see more of him. You know, with him now, it's practice reps and you know, off the game reps that he had. So, you know, he did a nice job in the game. Nothing really stood out. The first rush he had against the Jets, the sack, that was a good play. It showed us some of his skill set. So we just need to see more.
All right. He did a nice job. Nothing really stood out.
He did a nice job in the game. Nothing really stood out.
Well, I guess you could say nothing stood out from a bad standpoint either, right? Nothing. There was nothing so obviously flawed in his play that it probably earned him a solid designation for his play in that game. So I don't know where Bjorn Werner is. If he's, you know, does he have a realistic chance? When you look at the depth on the defensive line, I would say his chance is pretty slim to make the final 53, but he's out there, you know, trying to be as solid and non-standoutable as possible.
So the last two cuts were obviously Jeremy Parnell and Bjorn Werner.
Yes.
Which one, I mean, he called Bjorn Werner, he did a nice job, and
did
he said
nice
Parnell
job.
Was solid, but which one do you think is higher up in terms
Parnell,
of performance?
He actually said Parnell was good twice. He said good, good, and he kind of laughed like he was almost going to call him solid, and we all know that.
He's self-aware, he knows.
He got to be aware because I think we've beat that thing into the ground now. Pretty effectively over the last year and a half. All right, moving along here, we've got the fan feedback spotlight to take a look at.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
Okay, so let's get to it. Fan feedback spotlight today, which is brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. Which current Jaguars players could you envision going down as the best at their position? You know, obviously, if it plays out the way it does, and that was inspired by Allen Robinson's 23rd mm-hmm. birthday, coming off a Pro Bowl season at the age of 22. So what were some of the nominees that we got?
From Mike, he said Allen Robinson, and that's a pretty high bar in this franchise with Jimmy Smith being up there. From Alvaro, Paul Posluszny, after we win the Super Bowl within the next 2 years. From Will, duh, Blake Bortles. From Jarrell, Jalen Ramsey, the attitude, athleticism, the competitiveness, he's on his way. He'd have to surpass Rasheen Mathis to get to that kind of level here. From Jason Linder, Meester was a good player who played a long time. Linder looks to me like an elite player starting young. From Brandon, Ramsey will beat out Mathis for best cornerback to ever wear the teal and gold. From Chris, number one, I think A-Rob Hearns will be able to pass Jimmy and Keenan. Two, Blake, and three, Dante, with a question mark. From Johnny, he's already on his way. Blake Bortles, from Lauren Brooks. Hello, Lauren. Blake, A-Rob, A.J. Cann, Dante Fowler Jr., Jalen Ramsey. So she's got a whole list of them in there. From Chad, Blake Bortles, hashtag lightning in a Bortles, hashtag steal the show, hashtag Pro Bowl bound, hashtag Duval. From Kyle, A-Rob and Ramsey can be. Julius maybe, but I think Mercedes is already the greatest Jags tight end ever. From Jimbo, Blake, A-Rob, and Ramsey, Jags cornerback history is weak. And from Duval Doom, in order of likelihood, A-Rob, I hope Blake. That's it for now. Got a good feeling about Jalen, though. And from Colby, we got Miles Jack.
Linebackers had some pretty damn good players. And I know Pozlesny's name got thrown in there a few times. He's not going to do much more to add to his legacy. Maybe another year or two, hopefully, of a solid play for the team. But, you know, you got Kevin Hardy, you got Darryl Smith, you got Mike Peterson, you got Pozlesny. I think that's your group. And it's hard to stand out above that group. Maybe Miles Jack has a better chance because he's writing a completely new book. As far as that goes, on Facebook, Josh said if Mercedes Lewis retired today, he'd be a lock to be the best in club history at the position. And while I believe that Mercedes has been a solid player, he says this statement is more of an indictment on the failure to draft and acquire talent at the tight end position over the years. I'm inclined to say Bortles, chances are we'll get another great quarterback down the road, said Garrett. Well, that's fine. I mean, you could say that about any position. One day we're going to have the next Jerry Rice at wide receiver, so therefore Allen Robinson or Jimmy Smith won't be the best. But we're just basing it on compared to what they've had to this point, compared to what you see on the roster right now. Linder at center, said Josh. Blake Bortles, Damon said, will be the greatest quarterback in Jags history as he will win 3 Super Bowls, league MVP twice, and he'll be 7th in league history with passing touchdowns. So 7th, specifically 7th in league history for Blake Bortles. Nothing else. Dante Fowler, A-Rob. Rashad Green may go down as the best return man in Jaguars history. Hope we get a lot of short TD drives this year. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Definitely could be in the running there. Carson Tinker is proving he will go down as the team's greatest long snapper. Man, how quickly they forget Zelenka. I mean, Zelenka was just here for absolutely ever. All right, happy birthday again to Allen Robinson. Happy birthday to Donna Murphy. And happy belated to Tyler Devitt. I'm about sick of him already.
Thank you. Congrats to Thomas Crowder, won the pair of tickets to Jaguars Bengals.
Good job, Thomas Crowder. Way to be quick on the dialing finger as we got caller number 4 there when we played the lovely Steal the Show lady here moments ago, who, by the way, on Twitter, Danny said, your Steal the Show lady sounds a whole lot like Gary Busey to me. Just saying.
Gary Busey's the best.
Let me hear it one more time. Let me hear.
Certainly not. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
And once again, it's too late. The tickets have already been given away. That was just a bonus airing of Gary Busey lady.
Can't have enough.
So I love her, man. Steal the Show lady. Not sick of it yet. Maybe we will run it into the ground sooner rather than later, but that point has not been reached. That does it for us today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. And tomorrow, hopefully to catch up with Ryan O'Halloran at least before practice begins tomorrow. See if we can get him in here for about an hour. And then we'll see if David Garrard's schedule allows him to join us on Friday as we get ready for Sunday night football. And here they go, lighting up the phone lines again. Nope, we only had the one pair of tickets to give away.
Yep.
Pretty clear about that, but we appreciate the enthusiasm nonetheless. That's going to do it for us. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. That wraps it up on a Metro Rooter Wednesday for Jaguars Today. But don't go anywhere. We got the boys of the Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
He did a nice job in the game. Nothing really stood out.
Certainly not.
You guys have a good day. Peace.